Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Monday, June 25th, and the Pistons coaching staff starting to come together. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of Locked On Pistons, an AP writer out in Chicago covering the NBA, Pistons fan my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well, heading back to Michigan this weekend. So excited to be back in Detroit. But thanks for making us part of your daily routine and sticking with us this summer as well. Today we're going to be talking about the assistant coaches on Dwayne Casey's staff that he's bringing in. A couple of names brought in that are familiar to a lot of NBA circles and especially Detroit Pistons fans as well. And some interesting names in the mix too. We'll have some more on last week's draft. We'll be joined by my friend Michael Stacey, a Creighton super fan and alum, who will tell us about the Kyrie Thomas experience as a fan. He's got some insights there, and I'll give my official predictions for tonight's NBA awards, which I will not be watching, but wanted to pass along my official predictions. No real surprises in mind. I know that's not the greatest tease in radio world to pass along, but the favorites sound like pretty good picks for me. But like I said, Dwayne Casey building the staff for the Detroit Pistons. The coach made it official with Sidney Lowe overnight early Monday. I guess not official, but the report came out from Adrian Wojnarowski overnight while you were sleeping Sunday night, Monday morning. Sidney Lowe, a familiar name in basketball circles. Most recently was with Scottie Brooks on the Washington Wizards staff, coached primarily in the backcourt with John Wall and Bradley Beal. Sidney Lowe coached in Detroit under Flip Saunders for a season and also played for the Pistons in 1984, six games at the end of the bench in 1984. So you probably don't remember him, and no harm in that. Sidney Lowe as a player was a fringe CBA, NBA guy, kind of end of the bench in his NBA seasons. Most notably as a player, he did play on the Jim Valvano team that won the national championship in 1983, played with Thurl Bailey, who was the star of that team, along with Derek Wittenberg and Lorenzo Charles, the famous shot that we've all seen. Wittenberg airballs the desperation three, and Charles grabs it and dunks it home for the Wolfpack there to win the title. Jim Valvano runs around the court. You know that play. I think I actually cried when I was watching that ESPN 30 for 30 doc. Maybe I was like hungover and emotional or something like that. But one of those really good 30 for 30 docs on the Wolfpack team with all those guys getting together and talking it out. A special team, a special season, and a special coach in Jim Valvano. As far as Sidney Lowe, not a lot special from his coaching career objectively so far. He coached at his alma mater at NC State collegiately and came back there and coached 5 years, really left the Pistons assistant gig to take over at NC State. He was about 500 for 5 years before getting fired. His pro career started as an assistant coach at Minnesota, and he actually became a head coach there at 33 years old, had a season and a half of dreadful basketball in Minnesota, definitely wasn't ready for the head coaching job there. That was 3 years removed from playing in the league as a journeyman, and like I said, did not go well. Assistant in Cleveland, then back to Minnesota. Then he became a head coach in Vancouver and Memphis during their transition in that franchise going from Canada to Tennessee there. So he was the head coach there for a couple of bad seasons. Then he was hired in Detroit, had the NC State gig, and then was back in the NBA with Ty Corbin with the Utah Jazz, and then back in Minnesota and now in Washington for the last two seasons. His career winning percentage as a head coach during those two stints is .257, which is amazingly bad. Alan Trammell thinks that's a bad coaching winning percentage. 79-228 in his head coaching career, ninth worst in NBA history of head coaches who have done at least 82 games as head of the bench. So he is 223rd out of 232 NBA head coaches that have coached 82 games at least in the NBA. Next to him on the bench will be Sean Sweeney for the Pistons from the Milwaukee Bucks. The headlines say he's been largely credited for a lot of the development of Giannis Antetokounmpo, one of the rising stars in the NBA, and that he was joined at the hip around the globe with Giannis, according to a story from Matt Velasquez of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But there's also that shouting match of this year on the Milwaukee bench between the two, Giannis apparently saying, I will F you up, and not in those words, as you kind of read the mouthing of what he said to Sean on the bench. So it actually kind of backs up what Velasquez said in his story about them being kind of like brothers, according to Giannis, And I can recall those types of moments with my brothers, so I can attest that that's the kind of a relationship that sometimes brothers have. Mike Budenholzer actually brought in, you know, Darvin Ham and pretty much his whole Atlanta staff up to Milwaukee with him, but Sean Sweeney was initially pegged as one of the holdovers who would return with Mike Budenholzer's staff, but it sounds like the Pistons probably offered a promotion or a raise and bigger responsibilities in his time with Detroit, so he's headed to the Motor City. From what I hear from people around the league, he's got a great work ethic, a student of the game as well. He played one season at Wisconsin Green Bay, but then transferred to St. Thomas in Minnesota and became Conference Player of the Year for them a couple times in a small league up there. He's been coaching at places like Anoka Ramsey Community College, Academy of Art University in San Francisco. He also wrote a book called The 101 Plays of the Playoffs, and ended up in Evansville in northern Iowa for a while, so he was around the Missouri Valley Conference there and moved up through the video ranks with the Brooklyn Nets, actually the New Jersey Nets back then, worked with Jason Kidd there in Brooklyn and Milwaukee as Kidd made those transitions. Kidd kind of noticed him, the video department, and elevated him to his assistant coaching status up in New Jersey, or then Brooklyn and Milwaukee. And Sweeney was largely credited as being the architect of the defense with the Milwaukee Bucks, with all those long wings. They used that to trap more than usual for other teams. They had mixed results late in his tenure. There's a faction of Bucks Twitter and Bucks fandom that kind of reviles Sweeney towards the end of his coaching tenure for setting up defenses that were too aggressive. They had aggressive rotations. They switched all over the place and resulted in some easy baskets at times. So, you know, a lot of good defensive ratings early on when he was running the defense in Milwaukee, but some mixed results later that ended up being partially for the undoing of Jason Kidd in Milwaukee and the reasons he was fired this midseason. So maybe not the greatest end of his tenure with the Milwaukee Bucks, but a young guy, well-regarded in NBA circles for his work ethic, acumen, and his ability to coach on the defensive end. Also, the Pistons hired a guy named DJ Baker away from Toronto, where Casey comes from. Baker will serve as a player development coach for the Pistons. He was in the video department in Toronto as well. After Adrian Wojnarowski passed along that news over the weekend, Zach Lowe of ESPN piped up on Twitter saying Baker is a very well-regarded player development guy, which probably means that he might be a source for Zach Lowe. But, of course, I'm not saying Zach's lying. He probably is a very well-regarded player development guy, and good high praise from Zach Lowe, one of the more respected NBA writers out there. But we're going to be talking to noted Creighton fan Michael Stacey about Khyree Thomas, his sweet baby boy for the last few years up in Omaha there. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 to 44, then you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we've got reasonable rates. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
And now a real treat for Locked On Pistons listeners. When I heard that the Pistons were acquiring the draft rights of a player from Creighton in the second round, the first thing I thought of was 2002, the NCAA tournament, when my Central Michigan Chippewas beat the Creighton Blue Jays in the first round. Chris Kamen knocks off Kyle Korver. But the second thing I thought of was my good buddy, Michael Stacey. Michael, thanks. He's going to talk to us about Khyree Thomas and Creighton and Anthony Tolliver and all that stuff. So thanks for taking the time to join us here on Locked On Pistons.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, and thanks for opening some old wounds with that loss. That was Creighton was a 6, I believe, and got knocked off by the 11th-seeded Chips. So, yeah, good memories.
Hey, there's nothing you can do. When Chris Kamen's flying down the train tracks, there's nothing you can really do, even if you are a higher-seeded opponent.
Yeah, I guess so. And that was before I was officially a Blue Jay, so it's not as painful as, say, when Doug McDermott got knocked off by 6-seeded Baylor. So, you know, there are varying degrees of pain as a Creighton Blue Jay fan.
That is correct. And back then, Michael was an angsty teen at Rockhurst High School in Kansas City before he went to college in Omaha. Two pretty cool cities, by the way. I've been to both of them. I've seen the boss in both of them, so they've got my seal of approval. You know, Rod Allen's talked about the barbecue in Kansas City for years now. Detroit fans are all very familiar with that. And if you're looking for a nice little road trip game for the Tigers, go check out Kauffman Stadium. And of course, the Tigers and Royals will be meeting in Omaha.
Exactly.
Wow.
That'll be a rare treat. And the College World Series, for any Tigers fans out there who have not been, is a great time. It's basically a 2-week party in downtown Omaha, and you get to watch college baseball. And if LSU's there, you're going to get to eat some gumbo. So it's always a good time, and would highly recommend the trip next year.
I don't know what eating some gumbo from LSU, if there's like some hidden meaning behind that, maybe with the ladies coming from the South. But Michael, what's the mood of Michael's a Creighton super fan, not only an alum, but has made trips to New York for the Big East tournament, and a big fan, checks out the road games, goes to a lot of the home games as well with the college buddies, and one of the more well-versed Creighton fans as well. What's the fan base reaction to Khyree Thomas ending up a 38th pick to Detroit? What's the gut reaction from the Omaha folks?
Yeah, I guess as a brief prelude, you've come to the wrong place if you're looking for level-headed analysis. Like, if you're looking at someone who is aggressively drinking the Khyree Thomas Kool-Aid, you have found him. But I think the reaction was a little bit of disappointment. I think, you know, a lot of the projections had him going first round. I know the range was anywhere from as high as 18 to as low as 36, and he hit kind of the, you know, below the lowest end of that range. And I think the thinking was, you know, he jumps after his junior year. You hope he can get that first round pick in a guaranteed deal. But nevertheless, to see a kid, you know, realize his NBA dream like Khyree did, and given how lightly touted he was coming out of high school, it's still a pretty unlikely story. So people are proud, happy, but at the same time, a little surprised by the fact that he slipped to the second round.
What do you think? What's kind of the narrative over his time? He's a local kid from Omaha as well. What's the narrative of Khyree Thomas's time with the Blue Jays?
A few different themes, I suppose, but if you wanted to kind of capture the whole 3 years, I would, and even frankly, the year before he came to Creighton has been just constant improvement. He was, I think, below 300 ranked out of high school, and did a year of prep school to sort of improve his stock. Wound up at Creighton, where he admittedly had doubts about whether he belonged there, but sort of put on some weight, got stronger, and after a, you know, solid but unspectacular freshman year, had a breakthrough sophomore year, and then his junior year, he, I think, was recognized nationally as a, you know, a star and an NBA prospect. So steady improvement year after year. And I realized that he's now 22 and maybe you plateau at a certain age, but I think he's got the work ethic and the just motivated mentality to continue improving in the pros.
And a little bit more specifically, what's there to kind of like about his game, and what's there maybe to not like about his game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the quick way to summarize him is a 3-and-D guy. The defense is really what jumps off the screen at you. He, you know, the hashtag that has become popular on Creighton Twitter is Khyree Fence, and he is just a fantastic defender, as I'm sure folks already are aware of. But he's long. He's, you know, he's only 6'3", but he's got a 6'10" wingspan, and he sort of disrupts passing lanes and just gets breakaway dunks, breakaway layups more than anyone I've ever seen. He also can be a lockdown one-on-one guy. And that's really, I think, his calling card. But also over time, he developed a nice perimeter shot, and I think he'll bring that to the pros as well. You know, he was over 40% his junior year. So 3-and-D is the big thing. But I think he's also good for the occasional sort of explosive in your face dunk. Like, he was good for one or two of those per game as well. So more of a, still a developing offensive talent, but defensively you won't find anyone better to guard basically the 1 through 3 in the college ranks.
High flyer out of Creighton, much like Michael Stacey himself.
heading down the lane there. Been scouting me at the rec center. I was a talent.
No doubt. No doubt. I think we've all heard the stories. Now, some comps. It's draft season, of course, the post-mortem. We all like to talk about our comps. And no pressure here, but we talk as Pistons fans at 6'3", great defensive player, can knock down some shots, well-liked by the fan base, and, you know, pretty, you know, good kid from all accounts, too. Joe Dumars is the name that comes to mind. He's just a Hall of Famer. So any problem thinking that Khyree ends up in Springfield in a couple 20 years or so?
No, I mean, I see his floor being Dumars and his ceiling. It's hard to say. No,
more of an Isaiah Thomas type of Hall of Fame first ballot.
No pressure on the kid. Just fill the shoes of one of the greatest players in franchise history. Equally ambitious comp of a current player, but this is one that a buddy of mine has thrown out. This buddy is a big Indiana basketball fan as well. And he sees a little Victor Oladipo in Kyrie, and that he's a 3-and-D guy and has, you know, consistently improved over the course of his career. So another ambitious comp, but I do think the Pistons got a real steal in the second round with Kyrie. Obviously, he was projected first round. I think there is ample reason for fans there to be excited.
No pressure whatsoever for Kyrie Thomas to live up to either, you know, first team NBA type of guy or possible Hall of Famer down the road. So better get to work here this summer if you're Kyrie Thomas, getting ready for his pro career. Now we're talking to Michael Stacey, Creighton alum. You all know Michael Stacey. I don't need to share the bona fides. But another Creighton's storyline with the Pistons, Anthony Tolliver is from Creighton as well and grew up in Springfield, Missouri, which is where Michael and I met each other as young, ambitious writers for the News Leader newspaper back then. But Anthony Tolliver, a free agent right now, fairly beloved by the Pistons fan base. A lot of us want him to come back, but understand the realities of the salary cap and the fact that Anthony probably earned himself a multi-year deal and possibly a little bit of raise on the open market if that bears out. But so with two Creighton beloved Blue Jays in Detroit, is there a chance that Nebraska folks load up the horse and buggy and make some trips up to Detroit?
A strong possibility, I would say. And in fact, I already saw some people on Twitter saying that the Pistons needed to get a exhibition game in Omaha. So there's already some support of that idea. And once upon a time, this was 05 maybe, the Pistons did have an exhibition game against the Timberwolves in Omaha, and I attended that.
Well, I think we all remember that.
Yeah, it was legendary. I don't recall the outcome, but you do mention Anthony Tolliver, and I had the chance to cover Anthony when I was the editor of the sports editor, rather, of the Creighton newspaper in college, and kind of chronicle his career. Obviously, he's very popular among Pistons fans, likewise among Creighton fans. I think it'll be interesting to see whether, you know, regardless of whether he stays with the Pistons, if he can sort of impart some knowledge on Kyrie. I think the Creighton alumni base, particularly among basketball players, is kind of a close-knit group. And AT being the type of guy that he is, I would have to imagine would try and help Kyrie and get him ready for what lies ahead in Detroit. So Kyrie may come in as a rookie who is a little better prepared than most, thanks to Anthony Tolliver.
And now building up quite a base of players. If you guys had to throw out a Creighton alum squad, you're probably off the bench. But you know, you got AT, you got Kyrie Thomas, you got Kyle Korver holding on to the end of his career, a long and strong career as well. Justin Patton, he was getting a lot of G League reps, I believe, in his rookie season, and McDermott as well, the favored son, I got to believe, of the Creighton program, building some good things at the Big East, powerhouse that we've all thought of as of Omaha, Nebraska, right. The Creighton Blue Jays. How about those guys?
Yeah, neither particularly big nor east, but it is nice to see a good number of Jays populating the pros. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what it becomes of Patton, because he's probably the most highly touted freshman in Creighton in a while. He's a fellow Omaha guy. So to see both Kyrie and Justin Patton making their way into the league is exciting for Creighton specifically, but also just Omaha in general. And I think because of their Omaha roots, those two were fan favorites all along. So hard not to root for guys like that who were hometown favorites and now on to the pros.
And now it's Creighton Northeast, I guess, in Detroit, Michigan, as the Pistons have another former Creighton player, another standout from the Blue Jays. And Michael, I want to make it official here on the pod. I know many of us still remember your first trip to Detroit, but I want to officially invite you back to see Kyrie and maybe Anthony Tolliver as well at Little Caesars Arena this year, or maybe catch a Lions game and see at Ford Field Matthew Stafford and the boys. So come see us up in Michigan sometime.
Appreciate the invite. And if I could make one sort of additional comment to stoke excitement among Pistons fans, it is that Kyrie, I think as a culture fit for what I perceive Detroit Pistons culture to be, which is sort of hard-nosed, defensive, gritty, throw out any sort of cliche you want there. I think Kyrie is that. You know, when I think Pistons, I think the 04 Pistons who held the Lakers to under 70 in a finals game, or I think obviously of the Bad Boys and their sort of defensive tenacity. And in Kyrie Thomas, you are absolutely getting that. He's every bit as tough as any of those, you know, great Pistons defensive teams.
Michael Stacey, Creighton alum, my good friend, living down in Columbia, Missouri, Kansas City guy. Thanks for joining us here on Locked On Pistons. Find him on Twitter at @jmichaelstacey. Anything else you want to pass along to the listeners before we depart?
No, I think that'll do it. But eager to see what Kyrie can do in the Piston Blue.
And now talking NBA awards as they're doing the annual award show. And by the way, you're probably hearing the dull roar in the background of the soldering that's going on right outside my window here in the studios. Disappointing. So if you're a little upset by that audio, please bear in mind that I'm more upset at dealing with this all day, every day, with the soldering that's going on here outside of the complex. But NBA awards that are going on tonight. First off, I'm not a fan of this whole thing, and I will not be watching, not out of protest, but just because, you know, I'm not that interested to stick around home and watch it tonight. I don't think that whatever positives that this award show brings nullifies the negatives of waiting so long to have it. You know, it's kind of, it's passed. The NBA season has passed in a major way. So it's not like we're waiting on bated breath to see who's going to win these awards anyway. Most of these are pretty straightforward. As far as MVP, give me James Harden over LeBron James there. You know, it's awkward. It always seems a little weird to hand off the MVP award after the playoffs, and as we all know what transpired. And if you had maybe an overall MVP that encompasses the regular season and the playoffs, and that's probably LeBron, and probably has been over the most of the past, you know, 12 or 13 years. Plus, it's awkward given that Harden wasn't, you know, truly outstanding in the playoffs. Not as bad as he has been in previous years in the playoffs, but certainly not befitting of an MVP standard in the playoffs this season. But it is what it is. It's a regular season award, and it should be his. So give me Harden for MVP, like he probably will win. Coach of the Year, and I promise this isn't, you know, rose-colored glasses or the home team pick, but I'm going with our very own Dwayne Casey for the work he did in Toronto this year. Goes down to him and Brad Stevens, basically. I think it's going to be Casey. I've been saying all season on this podcast that if you were listening, you know that I've been a supporter of what Dwayne Casey was able to do this regular season in Toronto. And being it's a regular season award, we're giving it to Dwayne Casey there. Rookie of the Year, slam dunk for me. It's Ben Simmons, and it's easy. Not super easy. Donovan Mitchell did have obviously a great season, but maybe it'll ease the sting a little bit for Pistons fans on the Donovan Mitchell front. For me, the Mitchell causing a stir about this not being Ben Simmons' rookie year pretty much sealed it. I mean, if you're going to be, you know, going fake news on us as far as your opinions on that, then that seals it for me with Ben Simmons. And of course, the play on the court for Ben Simmons, the transcendent skills that he has were by far the biggest factor in my backing Ben Simmons, who I like a lot. But he's my rookie of the year. Sixth man of the year, Lou Williams, going with him. Slight nod over Eric Gordon in Houston there. I actually think it's a pretty easy pick just because Lou Williams was an all-star and had a career year for the LA Clippers this year. Most improved player is probably the easiest one to pick. These are all pretty easy, but the easiest one to pick is Victor Oladipo in a landslide from Indiana. The strides he made moving over to the Pacers there were remarkable. And defensive player of the year comes down to Joel Embiid and Rudy Gobert. It's got to be Gobert, though. The drastic change in the season for the Utah Jazz once he got healthy in the second half of the year, just the numbers are staggering there, and his presence on the defensive end for the Utah Jazz was a significant one. But something to keep in mind as we think about the rim protectors and Rudy Gobert being the best one in the NBA is that that, you know, the defense in the playoffs, and things change from regular season to playoffs, as we know. But one of the bigger things is the rim protectors and the way that they affect overall defensive play doesn't seem to be as profound or as important as a whole in the playoffs. So something to think about when you're constructing the quote-unquote modern NBA team, which is something the cliche that we love to throw around now, the modern NBA. And maybe the fact that Utah Jazz had benefited so much from Rudy Gobert's outstanding defense in the regular season, maybe that doesn't pay off quite as much in the playoffs. So something to keep an eye on as you study your basketball this offseason, as I know you guys all do with your pen and your pad and your film room, and trying to break down what's going to happen with the Pistons in the NBA going forward. But give us a follow at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also on Locked On Pistons on Twitter. Give us a follow there. Give us a like on the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-MattShook, and a rating and review on iTunes as well. Thanks again to our guest, my good buddy, Michael Stacey. Check him out on Twitter at @JMichaelStacey. And thanks for his Creighton insight today. We appreciate it and look forward to seeing him spend some time in Detroit in the future, like some of my other friends that I've made throughout these years of living away from Michigan. It'll be fun to show off my hometown to them here in the coming years. So this has been your host, Matt Shook of Locked On Pistons. Thanks for listening, everyone, and enjoy the start of your week.